that in the court will hear the next case, which is Gagnon versus Ellsworth. Petitioner may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Chris Ingold, and I'm appearing here on behalf of Mr. Gagnon, the petitioner. Point of clarification, I understand this has just been set for 15 minutes. Is that correct? Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. If I were an oil and gas businessman, I would not do business in Colorado until the issues of this case are resolved. Oil and gas cases are complex. The development of these projects for the extraction and commercial viability, making commercially viable these petroleum resources, take a great length of time and involve long relationships. And what the Court of Appeals has done in this instance has essentially created new law. And that new law says, forget about a trade secret that you thought you had. If we find as a court, not even a jury, but as a court, that all these different trade secrets are somehow related, then we will look at the first time you might have gone crosswise with your former business partner, and we will take that as the beginning of the running of the statute of limitations.
Well, that has a certain amount of sense to it, doesn't it? I mean, you should act on your rights. You know, here's an employee that has betrayed trade secrets, betrayed the trust, the relationship, and so on, and may be liable for damages and injunction and who knows what else. Why shouldn't you have to act within the first time that happens?
I agree with you, Justice Hobbs. There is a sense to that, and there is a rationale to that. And I'm not saying that the other jurisdictions that have adopted the approach of intermedics are insane. They have a rational basis. That has just not been Colorado law. It's a policy choice that this court has made over the years that the discovery rule applies to all sorts of causes of action, and trade secrets is not to be treated differently. And somehow in every other Colorado cause of action, we have the discovery rule. But when it comes to trade secrets, we throw the discovery rule out the window and we go with the relational test.
Wait a minute, Ms. Engel, we have to interpret the statute. The legislature used the term continuum violation, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So how are we going to deal with that? And misappropriation means both use and discovery. So, I mean, you know, the legislature is the one that made that these decisions.
So
let's. What's the argument? What's your argument about the statute? You don't want us to follow California, which has the same statute, which is fine. So now, why legally and technically should we not follow the statute?
How to say this most gingerly? The Court of Appeals judicially legislated, which is improper. They took the statute and they grafted into it not just a single continuing misappropriation, but they said any related misappropriation as well. It's different if you talk about the Farmersville Dome area, that 25 square mile area.
Let me ask a couple of factual questions. Yes, maybe I misunderstand it, but as I understood it, your client gave this confidential information in 1997 to the defendants, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And then I think he testified in his deposition under oath, even in response to your questions, that the last matter that he gave was maybe 1999. I might be wrong by a year or something. Doesn't matter in terms of the statute, right?
I would agree.
All right. And then in response to your questions in that deposition, he said, yeah, it's all part of the same transaction. And then you filed a clarification, which was not, I don't know whether it was really considered or not, but I'm not quite clear as to what the purpose, what you think the clarification meant in terms of our statute. So maybe you could explain that.
You know, I think in one sense the difficulty is it's a technical field of endeavor. But I think it's made more clear in that in his first deposition and throughout the majority of his second deposition.
Well, wait a second. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, there are two different areas and yes, probably different drilling and different kinds of considerations. But the information, the confidential information was given well when the statute ran. The awareness of your client that this breach of confidentiality had occurred many moons ago was all there, and he decided not to do it, not to act on it at that time. I mean, he says specifically in response to your questions that I knew about it and all that. So why is that not covered by our statute? I'm having trouble.
Sure. I would approach it in this fashion. There's the provision of the information, and then there's disclosure and or use, which would be the violation. So if I provide a trade secret about a CPU electronic circuit, and at the same time and in the same meeting, I provide the special plans of a lawnmower, and then 2 years later, you violate my trade secret on the lawnmower, and 10 years later, you use or disclose the CPU trade secret. Those are two different trade secrets. And it's no different here, where you have a 25 square mile area with shallow pay zones, mostly oil, versus a four county wide region dealing with shale, unconventional gas deposits.
Mr. Engel?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's easy in your example to see how those seem to be very distinct sets of trade secrets. The Court of Appeals groping with this language of the continuing misappropriations did use the language that you talked about, single trade secret or multiple related trade secrets. I don't know that they're legislating there. It seems that they're groping with, how do you define that? What is a trade secret? The statute, of course, refers to trade secrets. What do you do with multiple trade secrets? How do you find that dividing line? I understand in your case you can say separate geographic areas, and in your example you gave very disparate types of things. But how do you state that principle? You disagree with how they stated it, related, as well as to the application to your case. How would you suggest that we define what are trade secrets and what are more trade secrets that aren't part of the same continuing misappropriation?
I believe the court has to decide on an approach. And the approach is, will this court pronounce that it is a judicial duty to state what is and is not a distinct trade secret, or will it be left to the jury? And I would submit that this case should have been left to the jury, that the facts are not so clear that a judge looking at it could say, oh, they're the same, they're related.
There. How do we guide that jury?
How
would you inform the jury whether these are again, you don't want to use related, so whether these are trade secrets that are part of the same misappropriation or whether these are a separate misappropriation.
I think those are evidentiary matters of proof, and it would require probably expert testimony to elucidate. I believe that we had...
What does the instruction that you would give a jury sound like? I'm not asking you to make one right now, but how would you address this point of law to a jury?
If the concepts in question are distinct so that they could be used separately from each other, they are separate and distinct. And in this case, you could exploit the shallow pay zones in the 25 square mile area commercially in one fashion, and you could exploit the four countywide gas play, unconventional play, in a separate fashion. They're not related. They're separate. They're commercially exploitable in different fashions at different times, and one is not dependent upon the other.
But what do you mean by different fashions or the same fashion? What does that mean?
As the testimony in the deposition set forth, traditionally in oil well drilling, you drop a shaft down into the ground and you suck the oil out. But over the years, especially when we're talking not about shallow pay zones of oil like was the 25 square mile area, when you're talking about gas, just dropping a shaft down hasn't proven to be that successful. So they've developed horizontal drilling mechanisms where you go down and then you actually are able to turn the bit and go sideways at an extreme distance. So you may have a well that looks like it's right here, and it may be siphoning gas out from 2 or 3 miles away. And that's what the second area was. It was a deeper, unconventional process, and it dealt with fractured shale, and it was just a different process than your straightforward drop of a shaft down into the ground.
So would it be different methods of extraction?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you're still going to use a well. You're still going to drill, and it's still petroleum industry, but there's a difference between oil and gas. Oil flows, gas rises, one's a liquid, one's a gas. But the most important things were the depth, the location, and how you're going to get at it. Are you just going to drop a shaft straight down and hit a reservoir and suck it out? That's the shallow pay zones on the 25 square mile area. In the four county region, it's a whole different strata. It's a whole different depth, a whole different type of rock. It's dealing with New Albany shale and deals with concepts of fracturing, and horizontal drilling is the only way to get it out.
But can I bring you back to Justice Martinez's question? What would we instruct the jury? You want this issue to go to the jury. Under what kind of instructions?
The instruction as to whether they're the same or similar, I would submit, would be whether they are commercially exploitable in different ways and can be exploited at different times. That would make them distinct in my mind.
So through different extraction processes?
Yes.
Something like that?
That's how I would approach it. With respect, if I could reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel, Alan Epstein representing defendant Stephen Smith. Because the interests of all defendants are aligned with respect to the statute of limitations issue, all the other defendants adopt Mr. Smith's argument, and with me at counsel table is David McCarl. The issue on which the court granted certiorari is whether the trial court and the Court of Appeals correctly concluded that there were no genuine issues of material fact regarding the accrual of plaintiffs' trade secret misappropriation claims, because there is no material factual dispute that plaintiff was aware that defendants were allegedly using his trade secrets, which he described as a methodology of identifying and extracting reserves of oil and natural gas in the Western Kentucky area. From 1997 on, the trial court and Court of Appeals correctly concluded that plaintiff's trade secret misappropriation claims brought in 2005 were barred by the applicable 3-year statute. A claim for misappropriation of a trade secret must be brought within 3 years after the misappropriation is discovered or should have been discovered, and a continuing misappropriation of trade secrets, by definition under the statute, constitutes a single claim. Once the plaintiff learns facts causing the statute of limitations to begin running with respect to one trade secret claim, it begins to run on all trade secret claims as well.
Epstein, yep. Could you focus on why trial judge properly granted the motion for summary judgment? Why there are material facts is basically Mr. Ingold is arguing?
Because
these are two separate, entirely different, I mean, obviously two different geographical areas, but with respect to two different trade secrets.
Well, they're two separate areas, but they're the same trade secret.
How so?
Because it is an amorphously described and morphing description of a methodology of extracting oil and natural gas. And I think that the fact that you may have to use different equipment in one area than another is splitting hairs. It's still a methodology for extracting oil and gas.
Is it one methodology or two? How do you split or not split that hair?
Well, I don't know what the methodology is. It's never been explained precisely by plaintiff what it is.
Isn't that a difficulty with the, going back to Justice Bender's question, with the ruling at this stage of the proceedings? I mean, shouldn't there be some development of what these claims are about in order to understand the nature of the trade secrets?
Well, there was considerable development. There were two depositions. There were reams of paper attached to the summary judgment pleadings, and I don't think there's anything more that could have been developed factually. It's just that plaintiff is dividing the trade secrets into two geographical areas. And two time frames, one between 1997 and 2001, and one after 2005. The reason being was that he testified that life was too short, so he didn't want to sue defendants the first time around. But it's still the same trade secrets, a methodology for extracting oil and gas. And again, the fact that
The limitation of your argument is, and I don't mean that it's a fault, I mean that you seem to limit the concept of a continuing misappropriation to trade secrets that are of like kind in some respect. Perhaps you would use the Court of Appeals terminology related. I don't know. That's what I'd like to know is, if you are not claiming that it's a continuing misappropriation with regard to every conceivable thing. In other words, if he had also given your client, whatever, methodology to make a new toaster, you don't seem to be arguing that that would also be part of the same continuing misappropriation. So help me draw the line.
Well, exactly. And I'm not sure where you do draw the line, but this court always draws lines. And
and we always need help doing it.
Sometimes they're crooked.
Exactly. It's and you get into the area of how many angels are dancing on the head of a pin. But if one trade secret is a methodology for extracting oil and gas, and not, the other one is a new iPod with more applications, obviously those are different trade secrets. They're not a continuing misappropriation of the same trade secret.
I mean, that sort of says, well, you know it when you see it. He's telling us different geographic areas, different methodologies. You're telling us same methodology, same geographic area. Obviously depends on how broadly you define the methodology, how broadly you define the geographic areas. And so that's troublesome to me. I remain groping for a standard there that determines, and it's also sort of interesting, it's not even a trade secret we're talking about, because they've used the plural, so you're really sort of talking about whether this is a different set of trade secrets.
I would use the Court of Appeals description, similar or related to trade secrets. And it may be a little bit more difficult to do in a case like this, but it's all the same generic category. It's a methodology of extracting oil and natural gas. And if taking counsel's argument to its logical extreme, if the particular geographical dynamic in one area required a 36-inch bore, and an area 10 feet away required one that was 40 inches, he'd be arguing that those are two different trade secrets and two different statutes of limitation would apply, and you'd never have, and the statute would be unworkable. And I think that his allegations are consistent enough in this case that it's really the same. It's really all the same trade secret or related trade secrets. And I think that the Intermedics v. Ventratex case is as close to being on point as any case out there, and there aren't very many cases in it.
Okay, give me the underlying policy reason, because I think there's a hint in your argument here that business is business. Let's get on with business here, and you should stand and either bring an action if you claim something is yours and being is misappropriated, or, you know, it somehow is anti-competitive to keep bringing this thing up later on. I mean, what is the policy of our statute? And tell me about the bold claim here that we've got to totally understand this industry or we don't understand this case.
The policy of our statute of limitations, which is the same policy of all statute of limitations, is to advance, to promote justice, discourage unnecessary delay, and forestall the pursuit of stale claims. And that is exactly what the Court of Appeals decision accomplishes. In the context of the trade secret violation statute of limitations, the Intermedics Court, interpreting the California statute, which is identical to the Colorado statute, held that the plaintiff has a responsibility to take prompt and assertive corrective actions with respect to all of the plaintiff's interests whenever plaintiffs detect a fracture in a once confidential relationship. Imposing this responsibility advances society's interest in preventing avoidable increases in the magnitude of the economic harm caused by breaches of obligations. And that is what happened there, in which case, in a situation in which the plaintiff brought a trade secret violation claim for misappropriating a process or an implantable defibrillator, and dismissed the action, and then brought it again because the defendant misappropriated the trade secret again after the first complaint was dismissed, and the courts. The policy of the statute of limitations is that you must pursue the claim when it first arises and when you know it first arises to advance the policy behind all statutes of limitation.
Mr. Epstein, I have a question of a slightly different kind, if you're finished with that area. I'm sure you've seen jury trials where there has been a question of statute of limitations, and the case has gone to the jury with a special interrogatory asking the jury to make a determination of when the cause of action arose. And I understand that in this kind of case that would be particularly problematic because of the nature of this information had been, I guess, even submitted to the trial judge under seal initially. Is that right? I think that's my recollection, is that the deposition excerpts and whatnot were submitted under seal.
It doesn't really matter.
Is that right? Okay, it seems that is correct. So it would be hard to give that kind of information to the jury since it's private information, but assuming that you could, and assuming that the issue here really is this whole question of fact versus question of law problem, I mean, it seems clear to me that one of the reasons that people are trying to find this to be a question of law as opposed to a question of fact is just that it's so incredibly difficult to try this issue. And so you kind of have to take, I think what the judge did and maybe the Court of Appeals did too, is just said, well, if we create a legal definition that's broad enough or flexible enough that we get rid of this whole problem of question of fact. And my question is, why couldn't this have been tried, given that there probably is a question of fact here to a jury with a special interrogatory making that kind of a determination as to whether this was a single or a related trade secret?
I think that if you agree with plaintiff's argument that because the trade secrets involve different geographical areas and slightly different means of extracting the oil and gas, if you accept that that creates a jury question, I don't think that that creates a jury question.
I understand that that's your position.
As a matter of law, the statute didn't run.
Well, it may create a jury's question, or it may not, depending upon how we define that. Yeah. And I guess my sort of, I've seen the subtext of this case as being, well, let's define away a jury question. But in your face is really a jury question as to what was happening here. That's what most of these questions have even been about. You know, was it one method of drilling or two? Was it one area or two? And so why couldn't we just simply ask a jury under appropriate circumstances to answer a special interrogatory with respect to that?
You could if those facts were in dispute. But I mean, if those facts were in dispute, was a different methodology? Was different equipment needed? Was the oil reserve different from the natural gas, or was it really all oil? If that's a disputed fact question,
that's what we would do in any other kind of case.
Right. Our argument is we assume that that's true. It's still a matter of law that the statute ran.
So you're saying did you posture this motion for summary judgments in to say, plaintiff, we agree with everything you said, and no matter what it is you said, it's still one trade secret?
Yes.
Or did you say, here are your facts, here are our facts, and if you accept our facts, it's one trade secret?
No, we assumed everything that the plaintiff said was true for purposes of summary judgment. We would dispute it if it went to trial. We dispute whether there are trade secrets at all. But for purposes of summary judgment, we assume that everything that the plaintiff said was true.
I thought that the trial court relied on these statements of the defendant, or the plaintiff, sorry, in his deposition, where he seemed to concede it was the same thing.
Yes.
Wasn't that sort of the clincher for the trial court?
Yeah, the trial court relied on plaintiff's statement in response to plaintiff's counsel's question that it's all part of the same concept. And yes, plaintiff said, I'm seeking damages for everything that happened since 1997. That is what changed the court's mind and caused it to grant summary judgment the second time around. Unless the court has further questions, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Respondent Smith himself, in a deposition taken December 14th, 2007, stated that his initial interest was, quote, just in quote, a Devonian Clear Creek play, close quote. He was not targeting the New Albany Shale, and he later conceded in that deposition that his interest went beyond that to the New Albany Shale. So even the respondents concedes that there's a distinction. In terms of whether my client judicially admitted in a deposition that the things were the same, I think as the clarifications he submitted after the court had already ruled made clear, he was trying to express his frustration with the fact of being ripped off yet again. And so in the sense of whether he had suffered a moral injustice, yes, that was the same in 2005 is what had happened in 2007. He felt wrong. But the concepts were clearly explained by my client as being extremely distinct. What he explained is, quote, they're totally different concepts. This is a restrictive area. Farmers, it's identified on Exhibit 30, is a restrictive area that covers 35 square miles. And then he goes on and says, now the second area, which is much larger than Farmersville, has a different mechanism behind it to suggest that the New Albany Shale would be prospective over that area. And it has to do with the concepts of fracture orientation and regional stress and thermal maturity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Sir Engel, but if I'm understanding what opposing counsel said, he said, all right, we'll give you all of that, no matter how you want to define this. It's still just a single trade secret. You plaintiff, you set it up any way you want to, but it's still just a single trade secret. Or is that not right?
I don't think that's how they pitched it to the trial court. How they pitched it to the trial court, I think, was, look, he's admitted. In terms of now, even looking at that, I don't think you can go there. I think the facts before this court, the deposition transcripts before this court, especially as were attached under seal, clearly show a distinction between the two different areas and different approaches and how those are gotten at. I don't think you can say they were a single related type trade secret without changing the import of the statute. Thank you for your time.
On behalf of the court, I thank counsel for your arguments. The case stands.